kind of had to reinvent myself. I was newly single with two teenage daughters. And I kind of needed to get a job. And if I had started this in my 20s and 30s, I probably wouldn't have had the focus or the ambition.
Welcome to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, the show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. My guests know that business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and subscriber info, all is available at proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Beryl Stafford, founder and president of Bobo's, the makers of delicious energy snack bars. Beryl and her daughter started in their kitchen in 2003. The brand has grown to national prominence with distribution through all the big retailers. This story is the dream of many, achieved by few. We'll talk about how that happened and how Beryl is managing her handcrafted brand going forward. Beryl, thanks for joining ProCo 360.
Thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to this interview, and I'm looking forward to, in fact, Beryl brought me some bars and give a taste during the interview. But first, I want to thank the show sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for entrepreneurs. Also, MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. Okay, Cheryl Stafford of Bobo. Should we get started?
Yeah.
I want to read from your website. On a rainy afternoon in 2003, Beryl Stafford and her daughter Bobo baked oat bars that soon became a Boulder Cafe favorite. And then it goes on, but why don't you take over describing Bobo's?
Sure. Okay. So in 2003, my daughter opened up a cookbook and started making these gooey oat treats. And her name is Alex, but her nickname is Bobo. So at the time, I found myself to be a newly single mom of two daughters. People were coming over to visit and clamoring for these oat bars that she was making, and she kept making them over and over. And somebody had the suggestion that maybe I should sell these and make a business out of it. And I knew nothing about business. I knew nothing about food. But I decided to do it anyway, and I wrapped them in Saran wrap and put a hand-drawn label on the first couple of bars and brought them to the coffee shops and insisted that people sell these vegan gluten-free bars.
And, you know, it's so funny because that where we're going to go, listeners, in this interview is that your story could be told, the beginning of your story could be told by a million people. It's the ending of the story, or at least the process, progress that you've made that's going to make it so interesting. And to put that in perspective, describe your operation now.
So to put that in perspective, so I started it at my home in my little tiny kitchen, and now we're producing over a million bars a month. Hmm. And I have about 100 employees, and we're baking them.
And you're still in Boulder.
Yep.
And on the website, you know, you can still see the pans, and they're being hand-pressed into the pans. I mean, this is still this whole notion of remaining sort of this crafted product versus a factory-oriented product, right? How is that? How do you think about that, and why have you chosen that?
Well, so we will always bake them in Boulder. And I was insistent from the very beginning to keep them handmade. And each bar is perfectly imperfect. Hmm. And that's just part of our lore, and we're going to always keep it that way.
Well, and I'm looking at the bars now. You were kind enough to bring me a bunch. Thank you. I can't share those with the listeners right now. But the packaging's beautiful. The product, you know, you can see that they're not perfect, right? Perfectly imperfect. That's mm-hmm. the way to go. So there are so many people, though, who started these food product businesses in their home and the same story. Their friends said, you should sell these, blah, blah. And a few take off, most don't. So in your case, was the business driven by you? As it grew, was it driven by customer demand? Or did you really set your mind to creating a business that would explode?
You know, actually, I did not. It started out as a hobby for a couple of years. So I didn't work at it that hard in the first few years. And then it started to take off mm-hmm. and orders were picking up. And but honestly, the key to the success of this Bobo business has been the taste.
But is that enough to drive, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. other attributes at the time, vegan, gluten-free, you know, all of those things were just becoming popular. And so we kind of rode that crest of that wave right in the beginning.
Well, how did you go from being in a few little coffee shops to what really became at some point a business, right?
A lot of shoe leather.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's not really a business when you're just delivering 10 bars at a time to six different coffee shops. Come on, it's not really a business. At
right.
some point, a flip switched, right?
Yeah, it just...
A switch flipped. Go.
Yeah. Well, consumer demand. I got into distribution, which broadens your retail expansion. So just gradually, I mean, I've been doing this for 15
yeah.
years.
But when you say got into distribution, what's that mean?
So that means now instead of me driving to the coffee shop with a box, a distributor comes to my bakery and picks up and takes the product to all of their yeah. retail
How
shops.
How big were you when that happened?
Let's see. I would say I was in about 4 or 5 years
yeah.
doing this.
And at what point in that 4 to 5 years did you say, okay, this is really going to be a business, you know? I've gotten past the hobby stage. This really is something.
Yeah, I think it was when I moved into my own commercial kitchen, which was probably about 5 years after I started it.
Yeah. And at what point, what were your sales then?
I think maybe 100,000 a
yeah.
year or something like that.
Because I'm trying
like
to figure out like what went on in your head when you said, okay, it's time. It's
yeah.
time to really turn this from a hobby to a business.
Yeah,
to
it was in the very beginning. I would
it
say
was.
It was after a couple of years.
And was there any specific moment, anything that went through your head at the time that happened?
You know, I just saw customer demand growing.
Yeah.
And
you know, you're This whole roadmap to success is interesting to me because your LinkedIn bio says that you enjoy being an inspiration for aspiring entrepreneurs who want to make a difference. And so my question for you is, I mean, to what extent do you think that Bobo's is like a roadmap for entrepreneurial success?
I knew nothing about business. And I'm a perfect example of somebody who, if they want to start a business enough, you can do it. Anybody can do it if I can, because I had no experience.
But did you really even want to start it when people said put this in shops? Were you really intending to start a business?
Not really.
Yeah,
it was more of a hobby, and it just grew out of customer demand.
So what do you think specifically do you think drove sort of the success? You say customer demand. You said the taste. You know, at what point were you able to sort of leverage those little coffee shops and so forth to drive demand? When did you feel it?
You know, I guess when Whole Foods picked us up in the beginning, local.
Did you take it to Whole Foods?
I did. I brought them in myself and the bakery picked me up.
Really? What's the process for doing that? When you walk in, you take a sample and ask to meet with the bakery manager?
Yeah.
How does that work?
And they look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
You don't really do that, but I did.
Really? And so in Whole Foods still, and I don't know if they do now, but they had this pride of being able to buy certain products locally, right? Is that what you appeal to?
Yes.
Can anybody still do that? Can anybody still walk in? Now they're owned by Amazon. I don't know.
Yeah, it's changing.
Yeah.
But yeah, Whole Foods is known to take in local products and help small businesses grow.
So you were learning as you went.
Mm-hmm.
What mistake you reflect on? You know, most of our best lessons come from a mistake along the way, right? As you look back on the mistakes you made when you were leveraging from the little bake shops to a real business, what comes to mind?
You know, probably I took so long to bring in resources. In other words, I did it myself for probably 8 years with no sales help and a couple of little bakers with me, you know. And so looking back, bringing in some more talent and maybe another capital partner in the beginning might have helped me escalate the business a little faster.
Yeah. In hindsight, do you wish you had? Or?
Well, you know, no, because if I had, then I wouldn't have picked this great team that I now have. So,
yeah. So the thing about your business, too, we hear about a lot of entrepreneurs who sort of scale and grow based on demand. But the food service business, that's a different deal. I mean, you've got inherent risks. You've got requirements. And when you go from putting saran wrap around a product that you made in your kitchen to actually, you know, putting it in stores, that's a whole different deal, isn't it?
Yep. I know. And people ask me, how in the world did you figure all that out?
Yeah. How do you scale to that?
You know, I took a lot of classes. Boulder is the mecca of natural foods, yep, right? Yep. So there were a lot of resources there at the university, and there's a lot of organizations, Naturally Boulder. There's a lot of organizations to help natural food businesses. And also, I always tell people salespeople are great resources, because if you call a packaging salesperson to come and sell you, they tell you exactly what kind of packaging you need.
Who would have thought about that? That's a very clever insider tip, isn't it? They'll also tell you how you have to process the food in order for it to go into the package, in order for it to be labeled. They'll tell. What a clever idea.
Yeah. Well, and in Boulder, we're surrounded by natural foods entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So you've just got to tap into that.
Yeah. Let's talk about brand management. This is what I've been wanting to get into the whole time, and because I'm so intrigued with the Bobo brand. By the way, the packaging is beautiful. It's friendly. I love it. This whole notion, and what comes to mind is there's a book I read called The Human Brand, where he says the best brands make you feel sort of like this is a person you know, and they sort of brands over time have replaced sort of human personality, and you have human personality right in your package. I find that intriguing. But how do you think about sort of the Bobo's brand in general?
So we're really insistent on keeping to the original story of the brand. One of our missions is we bring you home. And we bake from the heart. So when you open a bar, you feel like you're smelling something right out of your mother's kitchen.
You brought me one. That does smell delicious.
Yeah, we're one of the only bars that when you open the package, you get the aroma of a fresh baked cookie. So we will always stick to that. We'll keep with the clear packaging, the picture of my daughter on the front, the story on the back.
Is your daughter still involved in the business?
She is actually not. She's 28 and has moved to California.
Oh, okay. But she can still be on the package.
Yeah, and she still sends me photos of all of the Bobos she finds in California.
Oh, how nice. I guess I'd hoped you had said, yeah, she's still there working side by side. It doesn't always work that way, you know?
Right.
Craft brands often get and keep sort of really, really passionate early adopters. You know, they identify with the brand. They sort of take pride in finding it and all that. How do you manage this group of evangelists after they start seeing your product in grocery stores and all that? That's a really intriguing question for me.
Wait, when you say craft brands?
Yeah. I mean, the idea that, you know, you're handmade, that you're perfectly imperfect, the idea. Yeah. So once you start establishing a big presence in groceries and such, how do you manage that notion of being a crafted product?
That's a very good question. And that's very tough. But like I said, we will continue hand baking in Boulder. Hard to scale when you're hand baking something. We've automated slightly, like the packaging machine that we have about three of those. Yep. But we will continue to bake right in our office. Like our offices are connected to the bakery. And we'll continue with the story and the love for the brand.
That's interesting because by insisting, and you were clear up front that you're going to always be handmade. You see that kind of compromise in other brands as they try to lower costs, they try to do other things. So the idea that you insist on continuing to be handmade, I think, in my mind, does make you, gives you permission to grow faster or grow bigger without necessarily losing, you know, a sense of your customer.
Well, we certainly have control over the process because we're not, farming out a manufacturer to make the product for us.
Well, how do you manage to be the same company, the same product in both REI, which is sort of a specialty store, and a grocery store? You know, how do you manage that too?
Well,
customer expectations around your brand.
Well, that's the beauty of our product, we think, because we're not only a nutrition bar that goes in REI, we're also something you could have at a coffee shop. It's versatile in the eating situation.
Well, clearly your Facebook fans agree with you because you've got 89,000 of them.
Oh,
right. So,
I didn't know you had that many.
Yeah, you do. Do you have a special relationship, or do you have people who work to engage that audience on Facebook and other social media?
Yeah, we do. We're leveraging our social media Right now, we are doing a campaign where we're getting, we're allowing our fans across the country to become brand ambassadors. So you can sign up and you get to have free bars, free product, free swag, free t-shirts, you know, free everything. Hmm. And what we ask is they give us feedback on new flavors, and we have them do recipes for us.
Do you vet them somehow?
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. The folks from Zeal Optics were here. They're in Boulder, too.
I know them. I have their glasses.
Oh, you do? And it's a great product, so I'm sure they'll be happy to hear this. But the they also have brand ambassadors, but they found they had to manage the process because everybody wanted free swag. So how are you going to do this?
Right. We're going to – it's going to be put on our website.
And you have to apply?
Yes. There will be an application process. So
wow. How many are you going to have?
I'm not sure.
I'm going to sign up.
But if you want to be one, yeah.
I'm going to sign up.
I'll put in a referral.
Oh, good. Thank you. That'll be helpful. You also mentioned on your website that you started Bobo's in what you described as sort of later in life.
Right.
So how did that, you know, first of all, why do you say that? Why do you even mention it?
I didn't know that I did mention it, but.
Okay. Well, I read it somewhere.
Okay. So. Well, it's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I found myself, I kind of had to reinvent myself. I was newly single with two teenage daughters. And I kind of needed to get a job. And if I had started this in my 20s and 30s, I probably wouldn't have had the focus or the ambition when I was 20. Mm-hmm. So
would you have made different decisions, do you think, at age 20 or 30 than you made when you started the business?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have worked as hard.
You wouldn't have worked as hard at age 20 or 30?
No, probably not.
Because, you know, there's all these stories about entrepreneurs eating noodles and sleeping on the floor because they're that hungry. You know,
right.
It's different.
I did a lot of non-glamorous things myself.
Like what?
Oh, well,
yeah.
I can't say that on the
internet. Yes, you can.
Well, I mean, I did all of the sales for the first 8 years, maybe 10 years.
Wow.
So I flied a lot and I, you know.
So you were packing your bars all over the country to get them sold?
Yep.
Wow. What else did you do that, you scaled?
I took a lot of no's. I walked into a lot of stores and coffee shops without professional sales broker, and a lot of chains don't really like that.
So would they just basically turn you away?
Yeah,
no,
they want the professional sales guy with you.
Wow. And that wasn't you, but look at you now.
Yeah.
Are you a professional salesperson now?
I would say so.
You're looking at your watch. I
don't
know. No. Does it depend what time it is? So would you say that starting later was helpful for your business success?
For me, yes, because, you know, I was raising kids in my 30s, and I didn't have a career, and I needed to find one when my daughter happened to open this Fortuitous cookbook. Mm.
Yeah. So if you've just if you're just thinking, who is this person that Dave Taver's speaking with on Proco 360? I've been speaking with Beryl Stafford, who's the founder and president of Bobo's, the makers of delicious energy snack bars. And you know, at this point, you've reached a fair amount of success. What's next for you?
Well, you know, I'm still involved with the business. My role is I'm doing a lot of PR and a lot of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm founder. And what's next is I'll continue doing that and growing our great team. And
and you brought on a CEO, didn't you?
Yeah, I brought on a CEO.
So what went through your mind on that? I mean, at some point you decided to replace yourself.
Yeah, it's been great.
She has a big smile right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, tell me about
that.
Well,
you know, I had been doing this for 14 years and doing it myself. So it was time for me to bring in some more talent.
Yeah.
And with him, I was going to bring in another a huge sales team and marketing team. So
it was time to scale and time for you to quit flying around the country selling bars. And So how do you focus now? How do you spend your time?
Well, I'm going to be coming here once a week to do these podcasts, and
Good.
I'll do some TV shows and lots of trade shows still.
Good.
As the founder, I would think that people enjoy seeing you, you know, at the trade shows and so forth.
Yeah.
What's the next market for you? Are there, I mean, how big can a craft, can a handmade product become? And how big do you want it to be?
Well, we will stay in our bakery. We can triple our sales where we are now. Mm. So that's our plan.
All in the bars. There's not like new cakes or cookies or cereal or anything like that coming
well,
out.
No, we do have some innovation coming mm-hmm. down the pipeline. Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's already, you already gave sort of a hint of where you might be going, because on your website, you've got all these recipes where you're putting your product in different applications. And so I think, I can see maybe where Bobo's is going.
Yeah. So we'll always be a fresh baked item. Mm-hmm.
Got it. What challenges do you still face? I mean, most people would think, wow, she did it.
Yeah. No, you know, I think I always tell people this, you never pat yourself on the back and just say, ah, boy, aren't I great? Look at what I've done. Because there's always more, you know, you want to grow bigger.
But now you got a president, you've got cash flow. You're not killing yourself doing everything.
Right.
How do you stay engaged?
Well, I mean, we're still facing a lot of growth challenges. We're not sailing down easy street by any means. Yeah.
Do you look to outside resources, books or people or other things to sort of help guide your thinking and help you continue to evolve as a leader?
Absolutely. I'm involved with Naturally Bolder, which is a group. I don't know if you know that organization, but
it's a
nonprofit group that helps local and national natural food businesses. But anyway, there are a lot of people that have been doing this a lot longer than I have. And so they've been great resources and a great help.
Yeah, and I would think you'd like to mentor others as long as they're not starting companies that make bars.
Right, right. No, I do get calls from acquaintances frequently with questions.
How do you, this is going to be my last question, but when you have people come to you and they say, I've got this delicious X, how do I turn it into a business? What's your filter that goes through your head to say, you know, this person's going to be worth talking to, or what the, no.
Yeah. You know.
You must filter those, because you probably get calls like that every day.
I do, but I really try to sit down, at least have a phone conversation with anybody who reaches out. And then I'll try to send them to somebody who knows more about their certain question, whether it's packaging or how to get into Target.
Got it. Well, I want to wrap up here. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, I've been speaking with Beryl Stafford, founder and president of Bobo's, Boulder-based makers of the famous Bobo's Oat Bars. Beryl, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm glad you were here. And this is Dave Tabor. Thanks again to show sponsors MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones & Keller. Thanks to my producer, Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com. Go there to subscribe. Again, that's ProCo360.com. Make sure you pick up some Bobo's. They're really good. Thanks for bringing them. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.